Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 12th day of February, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and this has been quite a week. Revelations continue on the one hand, from economic meltdown to genocide, and as people try to rise up, Big Brother and his jackboots double down. No doubt about it. The massive protest by truckers in Canada, called the Freedom Convoy, it's the longest in the history of trucking, has the tyrannical left literally terrified, even panicked. And as they get more and more desperate, they get more and more ruthless. So let's start our look back at the week that was right there with those Canadian truckers and their Freedom Convoy that had basically said, no, we will not, as a condition of continuing to be able to live our lives, decide to take voluntary suicide injections to destroy them. So they have the biggest convoy in the history of the planet. It descended on Ottawa well over a week ago, and the Canadian government basically are squealing like stuck pigs. Now, what's interesting is to watch what's happened since then. Here's one story. This is courtesy of the Burning Platform, Joseph Mercola, and lots of others. The trucker Freedom Convoy protest has spread now globally. There are plans for it all over the European Union. There's a European Freedom Convoy that's starting in another week or so. Even people in the United States have decided that they've had enough. They can see how it's done here. The last weekend, there was a story about Go F Me, and I think that's the only way to put it anymore, because F does not stand for fund. Put it in there whatever you want. But it's Go F Me because they take the funds, they lie about what they're going to allow them to be done with, then they try to steal them and give them to other leftist organizations that they called worthy causes, Black Lives Matter, Planned Parenthood, you name it. They weren't specific. But there was a big outcry about that, and people basically ought to bankrupt Go F Me. And they decided, oh, well, we will then refund the money. So there's a Christian fundraising platform, an alternative, not nearly as big, at least it wasn't, called Give, Send, Go. And Give, Send, Go raised $1 million overnight, the first night after Go F Me tried to steal all that money with the Canadian government's pressure. And then, before the week was out, they had $8 million in that fund set to go to the Canadian truckers. Now, what happened in the meanwhile is that the Gestapo in Canada raided the place where the Canadian truckers were centralizing, and this was a mistake, obviously, their fuel. They had LP gas to keep themselves warm, and they had diesel fuel, and they also were trying to get food and stuff in there to support the people that were literally putting their lives on hold so that they weren't ending their lives. Well, then what happened? From Thursday into Friday, the government of the province in Ontario sought and got from the crooked courts a court order to freeze the $8 million until further notice. So they're basically saying, hey, we don't care how legal you are. We don't care that you guys haven't yet decided to start raising hell like you obviously could have. Trudeau is still a slimy coward. Well, he was at least in hiding for a while. And I like this. In a statement on Twitter, Give, Send, Go, in response to the court order, said, quote, know this, Canada has absolutely zero jurisdiction over how we manage our funds here at Give, Send, Go, and added, all funds for every campaign on this platform, Give, Send, Go, flow directly to the recipients of those campaigns, not the least of which is the Freedom Convoy. So they're doing the right thing, or trying to. Meanwhile, you've got the criminally negligent networks that are literally coming out and encouraging violence. They have called, a CNN analyst this week called on those opposing the convoy, including the Gestapo, to resort to extreme solutions. Slash the tires of the trucks, arrest the drivers, empty their gas tanks, basically hurt them. In other words, they have not done any violence yet. We've called them all kinds of names. We've called them Nazis. Let's see if we can't provoke them to violence by continuing to destroy everything that they've worked for and harass them to boot besides. This is horrible, guys, but the battle lines have been drawn, and I'm thankful that so far at least the Canadian truckers are doing the right thing. They've been extremely effective. There's all kinds of provincial governments outside of the central tyranny there that have said, okay, we're going to drop the mask mandates and the vaccine mandates and begin to try to at least move a little bit in the other direction. And as we'll see from some of the other stories looking back on this week, Big Brother is hardly going to allow freedom to reemerge without killing as many people along the way as possible. Before the big economic news on inflation came out this week, and even the print was ugly, but not as ugly as the truth, it became obvious that the jobs data from the Bureau of Lying Statistics was another stinking whopper. Where last week, the payroll numbers were just so good they were, yeah, emphasis here, downright unbelievable. It was called a stunning payrolls beat by Zero Hedge, and they noted that for those who only look at the headlines, the payroll report was a veritable shock. Coming in at 476,000 alleged jobs, it was almost four times the consensus median expectations and orders of magnitude above Goldman's forecast of about 250,000. Putting the stunning three sigma beat of expectations in context, they say, it came in above all 78 economist estimates and was more than double the highest forecast among that group from HSBC. Even more ludicrous were the historical adjustments, and herein lies the rub, which saw December increased from 199,000 to 510,000, November up similarly, and so on. So how's all that possible? Why, even CNBC, while interviewing Labor Secretary Marty Walsh, just plain couldn't believe the BLS data, prompting the secretary to repeat what, on many occasions, the same liars have always said. Oh, the numbers are credible. He stands behind them. And yeah, you ought to believe them, because we pretend to. But is it true? Well, says Zero Hedge, here's what happened. First, just look at the December to January change that we can find. While the seasonally adjusted number rose by an impressive 476,000, the unadjusted number collapsed, tumbling from just over 150 million to 147.5 million. That's a 2.8 million drop, which, by the way, is consistent with the time shift from December into January, meaning that the entire delta in the January number, somewhere over 3 million plus alleged jobs, is due to arbitrary adjustments overlaid on top of the data. Say what? Well, I think the TGP summary is a bit more blunt. As they put it, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, sick, literally just made it all up. They quote Bill Hennessy at Substack, who says the January jobs report from the BLS has no basis in reality. The bureaucrats just simply made up numbers to make it look like the economy added jobs, whereas the truth is the economy actually lost about 300,000 jobs in January. ADP and the BLS's own report, deep down inside, actually admit that. But a 300,000 job loss would hurt the Biden Fuhrer. So the crooked accountants at the Bureau of Lying Statistics made up numbers and handed a headline to the ignorant, gullible, and official narrative peddling press. He goes through the tricks. We've talked about him here before, but you get the idea, folks. Don't trust the numbers, or for that matter, pretty much anything that Big Brother's trying to feed you. Because whatever you might want to call it, it ain't food. From Natural News, reflecting a story I've seen a number of places, and Dr. Jane Ruby, who's discussing the strange, never-before-seen white clots found in deceased, vaccinated individuals. The clots are found in the veins and arteries of people who have died after taking the Wuhan coronavirus alleged vaccine, the COVID-1984 stroke pokes, many of whom died suddenly due to cardiac arrest or stroke. And since she first spoke with board-certified embalmer Richard Hirschman, a number of others have come forward, with some scientists weighing in on the matter. People just want to know what's on the inside of these white, fibrous pieces of clots that are being pulled out of dead bodies, blocking the attempts of embalmers to do their job. Arguably, folks, because testing agencies and medical examiners haven't been doing theirs. Host Jane Ruby showed a photo taken by Hirschman showing the clots. They were very large, leg-length clots that formed literally a cast-like structure similar to a mold of the inside of the entire vessel. And by now you may have already guessed what the punchline is here. The clots may be spike proteins resulting from the spike protein manufacturing injections. Dr. Sukarat Bhakti has weighed in with his own suspicion of what those clots might be made of. She shared the video in which he thinks it's the spike protein from the virus. It's those cells, you know, lining the blood vessels. So in the lining of a blood vessel, the blood is in the front and the cell takes up the gene. Then the cell starts to produce the gene. The cells line your blood vessels, all of your body, and all organs, he said. The cell's now going to start producing the gene. The virus gene is the spike protein of the virus. And then he points to what you can see coming out of the cell. White trash is produced from the protein that hasn't been used, and that trash is producing the production the cell places in front of itself. So you have the spike and the waste. Now, the spike itself, he said, has this wonderful property, a property that is wonderful for science, but not so wonderful for you, because it has the property, it has the ability to know what is coming. These platelets, these little cells that start blood clotting going the moment it touches, gets activated and start wanting to get the blood started clotting. Regrettably, there's another type of cell that comes around to see the trash, and this cell is the killer cell, or killer lymphocyte. They're trained to see the trash of viruses, because then they'll come and try to kill the cell that's daring to produce the virus, which is the cell that lines a wall, the tapestry of your blood vessels, and this, he said, can happen anywhere. Well, that is, if you allow it to, folks. Don't. From there, I'm going to go to a story that normally I'd give a wide pass to, because quite frankly, it's disgusting. And increasingly, it's not like it's even unusual. But that's in fact the reason why I want to talk about it. Because it seems like we've gotten to the point where the Biden regime has become so out of control, and they're so interested in rubbing honest Americans' faces in the fact that the rule of law is dead, and anything that even remotely has to do with scripture, or things that the God of the Bible calls an abomination, they're not only gonna do, they're gonna subsidize, they're gonna force you to do, they're gonna teach it to your kids, and yeah, they're gonna ram it down your throats. Look at the Biden-Fuhrer's list of Supreme Court picks. We could care less if they even know what the Bill of Rights is, but we want to make sure they check all the politically correct racism and gender identity boxes. They've got a Secretary of Transportation who doesn't know squat about planes, trains, or automobiles, and whose only real qualification seems to be an understanding of sodomy, but now they're plumbing new lows that even Bathhouse Barry couldn't suck up his nose. The Biden regime's latest poster pervert has been hired by the DOE as the deputy in charge of spent fuel and radioactive waste disposition. Some of the press call him Sam Brinton, but drag queen aficionados know him by his alter ego, Sister Ray DOActive. Isn't that clever? And this twisted sister is not only what they call a queer activist, but he also brags about his kink, which is leading other gay men around while they pretend to be dogs on leashes before having sex with them. And for those that really don't understand these important qualifications for a high-ranking position in the federal bureaucracy, he's called a handler in the pup community. And as Zero Hedge Discovery says, yeah, it's every bit as degenerate as you might think. And one way or another, let's him check a couple of anti-scriptural boxes from sodomy to bestiality. And this, folks, I wish I was kidding, was what now passes for qualifications for a trusted position in the swamp. Certainly, though, no review of tyranny worldwide, especially in America, would be complete without at least a look at the continuing Fourth Reich attempt at American disarmament. Why, they seem to hate the ability of people to fight back against what they're doing even more than they hate seeing their faces unmasked and hearing their voices in public. Late last week, the Biden-Fuhrer, channeling his mentor Adolf, announced that the armed suspect who recently shot a pair of NYPD officers, in spite of their infamous citywide gun control, by the way, used a Glock handgun, which he then went on to claim was a weapon of war.
You know, the future's cut short by a man with a stolen Glock with 40 rounds. A magazine with 40 rounds.
Booga, booga, booga! Yes, any rounds is more than he wants the peons to be able to possess. But let's hear the rest.
It's really a weapon of war.
What a blithering idiot, and ignorant of history, too, but we're not surprised by that. If, in fact, the Glock was a dreaded weapon of war, as the U.S. Supreme Court pointed out in U.S. v. Miller in the 1930s, well, then it would be protected by the Second Amendment. As it was, they've used the bogus sporting purposes ruse to say, well, since it's not a weapon of war, the only thing you peons are allowed to have it for are sporting purposes. Und wie don't think that qualifies? The truth of the matter is, folks, they don't care. Any way you slice it, you simply need to be disarmed, because what they've got planned, they don't want you being able to fight back against. And to bring that point home, all of this came on the heels of the White Whorehouse putting out a press release outlining the new Biden-Fuhrer plan for a new gun control initiative. This time it's titled the National Ghost Gun Initiative. And if you've been watching any network TV of late, you've seen how ghost gun is one of those really scary newly PC terms that they're going to force into general usage. What's a ghost gun? Well, a ghost gun is something that you slaves simply aren't going to be allowed to have. Because the concept is, if you made it with your own hand, and you didn't buy it from a licensed gun dealer, well, they still need a way to make sure that the slaves can't possess it. So we'll come up with a new term and a new ruse. They're now going to, quote, train a national cadre of persecutors and disseminate investigation and persecution tools, they spelled it wrong, to help bring cases against those who use ghost guns. And doesn't that just sound really scary? To commit crimes. And what's a crime going to eventually be? Well, besides thought crimes, yeah, any possession of anything they don't want you to have. Starting with especially something that was once explicitly protected by the Bill of Rights. And there's an irony in this story as well, courtesy of LawEnforcementToday.com. Even some of the mostest leftists of those officials are beginning to admit that nothing's going to change if the Biden Fuhrer continues to blame guns, or even railing against cannons, as he did again this week, and not focusing on the criminals themselves, who are actually the ones perpetrating the violent crime and the homicides. And they didn't even mention the ones with government titles. Much less the ones that the Biden regime is bringing across the open southern border in mass and distributing throughout the country at taxpayer expense. But when it comes to the tip of the spear, and really stupid on steroids, you have to go to the far left coast to see what the Biden Fuhrer is going to learn next. San Jose's mayor, sick, has talked about seizing guns from people who thought they were owners and don't pay a new city confiscation tax. The mayor of that communist city, Sam Liccardo, spoke to Slate, what else, about seizing guns from people who refuse to pay that city's new $25 gun owner fee, or to comply with the city's new liability insurance requirement for people who thought they were still free citizens allowed to own property once protected by the Second Amendment. Breitbart News reported that San Jose City Council passed the pair of gross infringements, the fee ordinance and the liability insurance ordinance, on the 25th of January this year. And their communist mayor admits, in true CCP style, that the funds collected will go to organizations that intend to further gang rape and infringe the right to keep and bear arms. A foundation, he said, overseen by, quote, Stanford professors, an epidemiologist who's been focused on gun harm, ooh, booga, 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 and non-profit, yeah, sure, experts who understand domestic violence prevention programs and suicide prevention. Unless, obviously, it's suicide by lethal injection of Zyklon B vaccine. And in true leftist form, Liccardo explained that the ordinance is civil rather than criminal. That way they don't have a burden of proof. But still, it would allow them to seize a firearm, which is, of course, the goal anyway. And I guess if history is any guide, it'll be pretty clear that when they break down a door and kill somebody who's resisting that theft, that was part of the plan too. And what's next? Well, I've already mentioned the CCP president. What that means is that they'll probably bill the family of those that were executed that way for the ammunition that the Gestapo used in breaking down the door and executing their loved one. So once all the bad stuff can no longer be hidden, then what? Well, Hal Turner sources at the HalTurnerRadioShow.com say that an outbreak of smallpox has now been confirmed to be in progress in the Middle East within the country of Yemen. It began in November 2021, just a little over 2 months ago, and the lid was clamped down so tightly on it that he only started getting information about now. It took a while for blood from the first victim to be safely transported to a qualified lab, then tested and retested, and kept oh so very quiet by Yemen, as well as Saudi Arabian authorities when the results came back positive, because nobody wanted this info to get out. And now he says there are more confirmed cases, actually quite a bit more, and it can't be kept secret anymore. Covert intelligence sources from outside the USA, those that he said he worked with during his years on the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force, have sent me several images of confirmed cases, which he includes in the piece, along with some pretty harrowing death statistics, like a historic approximately 30% mortality rate, which make it very clear that this is not the booga booga flu. As you may have heard, the last ever case of smallpox in the world occurred in an outbreak in the United Kingdom in 1978. And the source there was established to be a smallpox virus grown for research purposes. Ultimately, all of the other known stocks in the world were supposedly destroyed or transferred to two WHO-designated reference labs with, biosafety level 4 facilities, where obviously nothing could possibly go wrong. Which brings us back to this, release. And interestingly, none of the individuals either lived or worked together or were even working in the same village. Yet all of them have contracted the disease, and that, he says, is the massive problem, because technically it can't happen. Well, at least not naturally. Which begs the obvious question, and we'll have to stand by and watch to see what happens there. About the only thing we really know for sure right now is that all the usual suspects still have lips, and yeah, they'll definitely be moving. On then to some other interesting stories that may or may not give us some insight on this. A recent report says Jim Hoft of the Gateway Pundit by Daniel Horowitz at the Blaze on the Department of Defense and how they manipulated epidemiological data after the initial data for 2021. Let's see, what happened early in 2021? Revealed a massive increase by almost 1,000%, 988% if you care, in doctor visits by U.S. members of the military. What happened in 2021? How fast could it be the mandatory COVID Zyklon B injections? The initial data was presented during Ron Johnson's five-hour hearing. We've talked about it on this show, called COVID-19 A Second Opinion, by Ohio attorney Thomas Renz, who's been representing a number of clients suing about the vaccine mandates. In response to the report, though, the U.S. military claimed, how's this for disingenuous? Oh, so sorry. The previous 5 years of data were plagued by a giant glitch.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
So what they're now trying to tell us is that the real number of doctor visits, ambulatory care in the military, is at least 10 times higher than has been reported for 6 straight years.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
And then they provided a corrected chart, which shows that there's, yeah, really nothing to see here. Move along, move along. Anybody else thinking that, yeah, their lips are moving, and we know what that means? Oh, yeah, and here's a related story. Same source, this time Joe Hoff. A devastating presentation, he says, has been sent to members of Congress, quote, exposing military corruption during the COVID-1984 plandemic. It's an anonymous group that's released this presentation showing that Big Brother's actions surrounding COVID, especially in the military, and the abuse of American soldiers are being given in the process. It's now in the hands of Congress. It was created to expose the wrongdoings of the DOD from the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, scumbag extraordinaire, all the way down to various commanders who do not have the fortitude to look into the orders that they're blindly and mindlessly carrying out and killing who knows how many people in the process. You'll find collusion evidence, it says, with the FDA, the corruption at the highest levels of the DOD, obvious violations of federal law, long-established privacy laws, as well as human rights violations, and oh yeah, that Nuremberg Code thing. And the members of Congress are asked to try to discern for themselves the truth. But here, though, are a few of the main points revealed. It asks the question, how can the Department of Defense carry out a mandatory vaccination program that has only products available for injection into the slaves that are marked for emergency use? And why did the military COVID fatality rate increase 54% since the mandate, while the U.S. COVID fatality rate decreased by 43%. And remember, folks, most members of the military are, in fact, pretty young, and therefore not really at much risk from COVID to begin with. Lloyd Austin, obviously, has been violating federal law for a long time. He violated multiple of them in this case by not divesting his stock interests, they note, in multiple companies and entities, and by breaking his, here's a laugher, ethics agreement. And let's just completely forget that oath that he took concerning the Constitution and the violation thereof by enemies foreign and, hear this, Lloyd, domestic. The story notes, and you probably remember this, there is no federal death agency approved comirnaty in stock. There's no comirnaty even being produced, and the DOD knowingly violated the rights of service members across every single one of the services, and as such, the mandate that DOD is claiming is unlawful. Service members ought to be allowed to exercise their constitutional rights, and gee, here's a thought, they ought to actually be able to protect those that they're supposed to be fighting and risking their lives to protect in the process. The story concludes by saying, on behalf of the American people and the members of the military service, we demand immediate investigations into the lack of transparency and the flagrant disregard for the rule of law by this congressional body. Anything less further erodes and degrades the foundation of sacred trust that the American people place upon those who serve, and that's an interesting word, in the military. Finally, as the week drew to a close, the faux White House issued this warning to the 30,000 or so Americans in Ukraine to get the heck out of there, because they said a Russian invasion could begin during the CCP Olympics. National Security Advisor, SIC, Jake Sullivan said, we don't know exactly what's going to happen. That's probably true. But the threat is immediate. and there's no guarantee that there'll be any other opportunity for y'all to leave, and no prospect of U.S. military evacuation. And you know what? If you were paying attention in Afghanistan, that ought to scare the hell out of those people and get them on a train or a plane ASAP. And we'll be right back. Welcome back now to the second segment of the show for this evening. This is your host, Mark Call. And while it's funny to see the totalitarian left finally beginning to have to backpedal after destroying just about everything that isn't nailed down, from the economy to the entire world rule of law, various Canadian provinces are backing off on the tyranny. Obviously, thank you, Freedom Convoy. Admissions abound that, oh yeah, the Booga Booga flute really was developed in a lab in Wuhan, almost certainly with U.S. funding from America's very own Dr. Mengele. And did we mention that the stroke poke or clot shot also causes cancers in the victims, once thought to be in remission, to roar back with a vengeance? Well, those revelations and more continue to pop up like traitors among the Joint Chiefs of Staff and in the Oval Office. But what's leading the headlines today is the hyperinflation, long anticipated by everybody that can actually read history or understand Austrian, a.k.a. biblical economics. Dishonest weights and measures always ultimately collapse. That's true of every fiat currency in world history. And the same goes for the biggest debt bubbles that are associated with it in human history, too. It's all coming apart. And today, at least one more admission on that score is front and center. And on this score, the UK's Daily Mail does a pretty good job of laying it all out in their headline and major bullet points. Biden, it says in big letters, calls inflation skyrocketing to a 40-year high. Elevated, yeah. And again, he insists it's temporary. And we know that the son of a you-know-what is a liar to the core.
Let's go, Brandon. I agree.
President tries to spin prices, soaring by 7.5% in the latest spike. It continues since 1982, with Americans now having to pay an extra $250 a month. Yes, it says under that, the average cost of consumer goods has risen for the sixth consecutive month, said the Labor Department. Energy costs, including fuel and used cars, rose an average 27% in January from the same time a year ago, 2021. Prices at the pump are up 40%, while grocery costs are up 7.4%. Your host adds here, so far. Guaranteeing a broad swath of Americans have felt the economic ramifications personally over the last month of money printing to infinity. They don't say that, but we should. January's inflation numbers have outpaced average wage growth for the same month. There's a duh for you. That was 5.7%. And West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, still a Democrat for now, but given where the party's gone, he may find himself, well, kind of like Ronald Reagan, realizing that the totalitarian left has left him behind. Anyway, he said the devastating report was a sign that Congress and the Biden regime need to, quote, proceed with caution before adding more fuel to an economy already on fire. Monthly rent increases were the biggest from December to January in 20 years, and household furnishings, too, saw their largest price increase on record. From there, we go to Zero Hedge, which, as we've come to expect, gets more into the nitty-gritty. The CPI print today, they say, was a stunner. Not only did CPI come in higher than Wall Street estimates for 9 of the past 11 months, but it also came in at the hottest level since 1982, when the Fed funds rate, get this, folks, was at 11.5%. And what with the market's head still spinning from today's post-CPI moves, let's take a more detailed look at what they call the heat map. Basically, folks, we've talked about some of it. But the bottom line is, literally just about everything was up. Some of them, the things that people don't buy much, not so much. Think vacation lodging, for obvious reasons. And new cars, too, but maybe that's because they're not making any. But others, the things people really need, have gone through the roof. Zero Hedge then goes on to quote the Bank of America statement that says, for the Fed, this report provides another wake-up call. Inflation is here, and it continues to make its presence known everywhere. That, explains Tyler Durden, is why the bank remains comfortable with its hawkish call for the Fed to hike 7 times this year. Yeah, folks, we'll see. beginning at the next meeting on the Ides of March. However, they say the market's also starting to price in eventual rate cuts that will follow the current hiking cycle and will end in a recession, or maybe an outright depression, as they always do. Risk assets, it says, have stormed higher, and they're now trading near session highs on expectation that, have you heard this before, QE and ZERP, zero interest rate policies, will follow the coming recession, which more and more folks are now thinking may start before April Fool's Day. Here's a related story, also from Zero Hedge and Tyler Durden. The Biden Fuhrer knew that, what with his approval rating plunging all new depths, he'd better come out and address the fact that despite his promises, or lies, the average American is now facing prices on consumer goods rising at their fastest pace in 40 years. And in the usual scripted whoppers from the White House, the Biden Fuhrer blames, what else, the pandemic, says he has lots of tools, like his face diaper and his Pampers, and he emphasizes that Americans are facing, quote, real stress at the kitchen table. Then, they say, he tells a giant fib about wages. Let's cut to that one. Quote, while today's report is elevated, forecasters continue, yeah, the only forecasters are going to be allowed to hear, they continue to project inflation will ease substantially by the end of 2022. And fortunately, we saw real positive wage growth last month and moderation in auto prices, which have made up about a quarter of headline inflation over the last year. We separately saw good news with new unemployment claims continuing to decline. And yes, they lied outright about that and fudged the figures. And here may be the biggest Whopper Day Tutte Whoppers for today, anyway. And he said, we will continue to promote more competition to make our markets more competitive and give consumers more choices, unquote. As the shelves go empty and manufacturers realize, we're not going to make it. Real wages, no zero heads, are down now for 10 straight months on a year-over-year basis. I guess that's what you get when the truth is called disinformation, and ultimately that means it's terrorism. Which leads me to a couple of follow-up stories coming hard and fast. The just before 9 a.m. Eastern Time update says, markets are not coping well with the reality that the Fed is going to have to act, and sooner and harder than expected. And that was followed by another update less than an hour later saying, with the odds of a 50 basis point rate hike in March, now at almost 60%, and they're rising too in anticipation of an uber hawkish Fed trying to stomp out the 40-year high on consumer prices, it appears the market's going to price in rate cuts. Say what? Rate cuts, as the Fed policy error is finally almost guaranteed to be admitted. But guess what, folks? It'll probably take a crash first. In other words, they say, the expectation now seems to be the Fed tries aggressively to stomp out inflation, crashes everything, and then has to flip-flop back to rate cuts and QE very, very quickly. As for your host, I can't help but find myself hearkening back to the words of William Shakespeare and Julius Caesar. Beware the Ides of March. From there, let's talk about some of the other truths that keep popping up, like whack-a-mole games at a county fair, in spite of the best efforts of the public-private partnerships and Big Brother's minions to smash them down. Here's one courtesy of the Daily Mail and Paul Joseph Watson and Summit News, both in the UK. Scientists in Hungary, it says, examining a unique variant of COVID-19, have discovered, I hope you're sitting down, folks, genetic material suggesting one more time that the strain was being examined in a Chinese lab, bolstering what's called the lab leak theory. Some of us would say it's been well over a year now since it was obviously established as about as close to fact as anything can get in this Orwellian New World Order. The researchers, quote, found traces of a unique variant of coronavirus while examining DNA from soil from Antarctica that had been sent to the firm Sangon Biotech in Shanghai, it says, and genetic material from Chinese hamsters and green monkeys was also discovered, which may, quote, suggest the virus was being examined in a lab using either the animals themselves or their cells. And Viscount Ridley says such evidence bolsters the theory that the virus either accidentally or deliberately escaped from Fauci's partners in Wuhan after being deliberately developed. And, says Ridley, the presence of three key COVID mutations is characteristic of the early sequences of the virus, all of which contradicts the continually discredited claim that the virus just magically jumped from animals to humans. Who could have thought it? Here next, another one that not only connects a few more dots, but ought to give people with half a brain anyway, still more pause before taking the Zyklon B injection or poison booster. More evidence that the mRNA not vaccines are triggering existing and maybe even dormant cancers in the bodies of those duped enough to subject themselves to it. From Steve Kirsch at Substack, the DMED database from the military shows that the rate of cancer is up by 3 times after the COVID vaccines were rolled out. And we've talked about that here on this show, but in talking with Ryan Cole, Kirsch says he believes this is primarily due to the acceleration of existing cancers, ones that people already know about or they've had or maybe never even realized were there, rather than creating new actual cases of cancer. What happens is that the poison poke accelerates the growth of particularly nasty cells, cancer being at the top of that list. The bottom line, don't be surprised if you take the jab and you suddenly have a relapse or what you think might be a new cancer, but really it was there. It's just that your immune system was, for a while, able to keep it under control. And there's this, too. The mRNA and the spike proteins that it generates migrate to and seem to persist in lymph nodes in particular, which may also help explain the continuing connection between the so-called vaccines and those various cancers. This study, courtesy of the market ticker and comments from Carl Denninger, asserts that the mRNA and spike protein produced by it persist for weeks in lymph node germinal centers in human patients. And as Dr. Robert Malone has pointed out, mRNA is not new technology. Moderna has been trying to commercialize it for about a decade now for various indications, including cancer, which of course is the disease where very high risks are tolerated because the alternative is basically a death sentence. And some claim that just about anything is better than that. But they've never been able to make it work. Now, of course, they're engaged in the biggest mass human trials in history. But the reason is that because every time they had enough of a dose to get the results they wanted, they also got toxicity. The injected stuff got broken down too fast, and otherwise, if you raise the dose, the toxicity went up enough that you couldn't get an effect without basically killing the patient. This, says the story, is the history of mRNA until now. It's why it's never before been deployed in mass in human beings. It's not for lack of trying. Dr. Malone hypothesizes that what changed was the substitution of something called pseudouridine, a synthetic that doesn't exist in nature, for the uridine, and that's the reason the mRNA jabs are able to produce the spike without being destroyed first. Well, that solves one problem, he said, but produces another. The body is incapable of clearing it out because it doesn't recognize it as foreign. So what is injected instead migrates through the body and is taken up instead of staying at the injection site, doing its thing and being rapidly degraded and cleared. The fact that the latter happens is well known. Well, at least it's known among the scientific community because of the Japanese data, which they tried to demand that Pfizer produce, and it showed things like wildly elevated presence in the ovaries, among other tissues, which shouldn't have happened, but it does. We knew this as of early last year, and yet nothing got done with that information. Now we know why, and it turns out, again, to be much worse than people were willing to previously admit. As we've known for over a year, the spike protein itself is cytotoxic. That is, it does direct tissue damage, which has two serious safety indications. First, contrary to the assertions made by a whole bunch of people, studies have found the spike protein in the body persists for more than 60 days, which was the duration of the study, meaning we don't know how much longer than that it persists afterwards. And that leads us to three deliberately ignored problems. One, antibody levels produced by these poison pokes were wildly higher than those seen with natural infection. We didn't know why dosing was set there, only that it was, and nobody's ever provided a reasonable explanation that Denninger says he's seen as to why they did that. I'll give you a quick reason here, folks. They're using people as human guinea pigs, and they don't care if they kill some in the process. It appears to be facially stupid in that if the infection was actually protective, and that's the assumption, says Denninger, then why would you deliberately go further than that? But the paper now documents something much worse. The reason the jabs produce such a high antibody count is that they also produce a much higher spike protein count than natural infection does, even severe infection. Viremia, that is virus in the blood, doesn't happen at all except in severe and fatal cases, but the Zyklon B injections, he calls them the jabs, produce it essentially every time, and in higher amounts to boot. In other words, the risk of serious long-term harm is likely greater from the poison poke than it ever was from the disease itself. Which, by the way, is entirely consistent with those correlations in the military DMED database, now the subject of that whistleblower complaint. Heart attacks up more than 300%, tumors up nearly 300%, myocarditis up nearly 200%, embolisms up 250%, all among otherwise young and healthy U.S. soldiers. Probably among the top 20% of all young people in the U.S. in terms of general health. And furthermore, he says, what's even more stupid is that irrespective of the potential benefits or lack thereof on an individual basis, they shouldn't be recommending or even permitting a person who's already had COVID to take such a poison poke. To do so is, as he puts it, gross malpractice at best. Which pretty well describes, folks, why people are now realizing medicine in America sure ain't what it used to be. In other words, if you ever did get infected, you recovered, and then took the poison poke, you've destroyed your durable protection against severe outcomes, and you're left only with what limited immunity comes from the Zyklon B injection itself, which is both evaded by mutation and wanes off within about 6 months or so tops to a statistical level of zero. And that, of course, folks, is not counting the damage it does directly to your immune system. As Carl Dunninger puts it, this may not help you to sleep, but still, these jabs, quote, may well wildly potentiate cancer and severely impair general immunity. It may take a while to show up, of course, and probably to be recognized as clinically significant in any given person. But once the immune system quits keeping cancer in check, there are indications that what happens next can appear quickly. And that, he says, ought to alarm anyone. This next story is one of those that I was surprised, albeit pleasantly so, to actually see show up in the Daily Mail. The headline is about a homeless junkie who says, I get paid to be homeless in San Francisco. Well, where else? All it takes is one phone call. The old school junkie, says the piece, claims that he moved to the woke city because it's, quote, pretty fucking easy to do so when he gets $620 a month from the communist city itself and the cops are, quote, like neighbors. In other words, the city's soft-on-crime policies, and that's putting it mildly, and government assistance packages really make it easy to be homeless. Quote, why would I want to pay rent? I'm not doing shit. I've got a fucking cell phone that I have Amazon Prime and Netflix on. So he does so, right now, literally by choice. He says, literally by choice. If we're going to be realistic, they pay you to be homeless here. He sells fentanyl to boot, while the cops literally turn a blind eye. But he's a good drug dealer, because he teaches the kids how to use Narcan, quote, in case they die. And no wonder San Francisco is plagued by drug addiction and homelessness. You subsidize it, you get more of it. And it seems like, having recognized that, the Biden regime has gone the next logical step. Oh, yeah, and they've admitted in the process that they're racist to the core, too. And this related story sounds like something you just plain aren't going to believe didn't come from the pages of the Babylon Bee or the Onion. This Daily Mail story soft-pedals it, saying that Biden's Health and Human Services, HHS department, is now finalizing funding to dole out, get this, folks, crack pipes to drug addicts as part of its so-called harm reduction plan. Oh, yeah, just like taking Zyklon B will reduce harm as well. The $30 million grant program is going to begin doling out the free bucks in May, intending to provide funds to nonprofits and local governments to make drug use safer and advance, I kid you not, racial equity. As Mike Adams says, evidently there's some sort of race-based inequity in the distribution and ownership of crack pipes. So a federal government which wouldn't even consider giving out free vitamin D to black Americans in order to prevent cancer and COVID is now funding the handing out of free crack pipes, because this is a great way to achieve progressivism in America. And yeah, kill a whole lot more black people to boot. The Washington Free Beacon reported that some of the monies will go for, quote, smoking kits and supplies. And a spokesman for DHS told the Free Beacon that the kits will provide pipes for users to smoke crack cocaine, crystal meth, and, quote, any illicit substance. Says Adams, in other words, the same HHS, which under the Federal Death Administration denies Americans access to ivermectin and monoclonal antibodies, is now gladly distributing free crack pipes instead. You can't have real medicine, but here, have some crack. Because the Biden regime thinks Americans don't need to be protected from actual disease, they want to push any kind of drug that'll kill you instead. They won't even let you know about the dosages of ivermectin in America, folks, but they're happy to fund any kind of drug use that'll kill people en masse. I wish this was a sick, disgusting joke. Let's go next with two related stories that make a similar but obviously very contrasting point. From Amoland.com about Senate Bill 675, the so-called NICS Denial Notification Act of 2021, which is gaining traction in the communist U.S. Senate and would literally open criminal investigations into 100% of any slave who is denied by Big Brother what was once called the God-given constitutionally protected right to own the only piece of property property that shall not be infringed. Yes, a gun. Even though government studies show that fully 9 out of 10 of these so-called denials are false positives. In other words, Big Brother can't find their you-know-what with both hands, so they deny the slaves the right to own something, and now they're going to persecute them afterwards to boot. Yeah, you deplorable you, we'll teach you to ask permission to buy a gun. Says Amal Lant, passage of this language would result in criminal investigations into tens of thousands of innocent, law-abiding Americans for the non-crime of being denied the God-given, once constitutionally protected, right to purchase something which now Big Brother says slaves can't have without permission, if at all. And from there, let's go here. See if you can't spot a connection. It's now 55 different federal agencies, says the headline, who are tracking people who've applied for religious exemptions to the Zyklon B injection. Up to 47 policy amendments, says a piece from ChristianDaily.com, were drafted by no less than 55 different departments under the Biden regime, all of them seeking to track federal employees who dared to request different types of exemptions to COVID-19 vaccination or Zyklon B mandates, said the Liberty Counsel Action, or LCA. On Thursday, that government watchdog reported that some of the rules apply to COVID vaccine exemptions, while others track all exemptions, such as when a federal worker or applicant seeks exemption from trying to work on the Sabbath day or even Sunday. Some policies even track visitors to their buildings or events. And according to CBN, there are variations between these 57 different policies, but critics have raised concerns over how invasive they are when it comes to privacy violations by Big Brother. Through these policies, the FedGov intends to track and permanently store religious and medical data on employees who dare to seek exemptions. And what do you bet? Just like with the NICS check, criminal investigations and then sanctions are next on the agenda. We'll teach you, you deplorables. So, as we look back on a day like this one, when it comes to trying to wrap up everything from an economy in terminal meltdown, by design, to a whole bunch of lies that just keep getting revealed, and, by the way, revealing the same underlying rot, this piece from Charles Hugh Smith of Two Minds seems to do the job nicely. It's entitled, "The Crapification of the U.S. Economy is Now Complete. The only thing left is the tiresome waiting for the inevitable implosion of the entire travesty in a mockery of a sham." Yes, he begins, "The U.S. economy has fundamentally changed, and oh, not for the better. And there are a number of dynamics behind all of this. But one of them is that few mainstream pundits dare to discuss the crapification of the entire stinking, fetid U.S. mess." That isn't my description, he says. Crapification has now become common usage. And if that word offends you, substitute terminal decay of, well, all of the following. Quality, competition, utility, durability, repairability, and, oh yeah, customer service. Because one aspect nobody seems to notice is the transformation that we've had from a society that once drew its identity from producing quality goods and services. Remember when Made in USA was something people could be proud of? To something very different. Anyway, that society no longer draws its identity from producing quality goods and services, and instead it's a society that draws its identity from consuming crappy goods and pretty well worthless services. And now that Americans define themselves by being consumers, they're enslaved to consumption. To limit consumption is to disappear, and spending time on socialist media is another form of consumption, even if no goods or services are actually produced directly, because one's attention and time, used to be at least, valuable commodities. In other words, Americans have been trained like Pavlov's dogs to consume, no matter how poor the quality or service. We just buy it anyway and then grumble over the decaying quality and service, but we won't take the only action that would impact corporations and Big Brother government. Stop buying the crap. Opt out, drop out, make it at home, cancel the service, just quit buying abysmally made junk and pathetically poor services. Big Brother and his public-private corporate partners are monopolies, or at least quasi-monopolies, with government-guaranteed protection, so they don't have to care whether or not customers are appalled by the poor quality crap and service that they produce. They know the customer has to consume whatever is offered, no matter how crapified. For the most part, they don't have a choice. So, go ahead and issue worthless warranties, products designed to fail, products designed to be unrepairable, software that is routinely declared obsolete, so you have to buy the new crapified version that demands insane amounts of memory and processing power. Go ahead, because the herd will continue to consume and buy the same garbage products and services, because to stop is unthinkable. I consume, therefore I am. And Big Brother and his minions at the local level know we have no choice since we continue to elect, or at least think we're electing, whether or not the votes actually matter, the best democracy money can buy. Those in power who watch people wear their slave muzzles and take their poison pokes know that all the grumbling is just background noise, because the mindless herd will continue to dutifully vote for the same crapified, corrupt, dysfunctional system every 2 years, and even if their votes don't get counted, they're too stupid to know it, and they'll put up with it anyway. He points to the IRS as a three-letter example of a government monopoly able to use force to extract fiat from the slaves. Their customer service is renowned. Now that principle's been embedded in an economy that's moved beyond planned obsolescence and shrinkflation to the point where one simple maintenance jobs like changing the oil in a vehicle or replacing the headlights have become complicated by, well, perversity. As competition and the concept of choice have been removed, the crapification of the U.S. economy, he writes, is now complete. The only thing left is the tiresome waiting for the inevitable implosion. Make sure you're ready.